CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Don't touch that dial. You're tuned in to the Dread Podcast Network.
Welcome to Development Hell. For every horror movie that hits VOD, countless others end up DOA. Development Hell is the podcast dedicated to unearthing these cursed horror productions. We're going to find out what went wrong, and then decide if these titles still stand a shot at the green light. I am your host, Josh Korngut. I am the managing editor of Dread Central. I am also a filmmaker in Toronto, Canada. This podcast is a proud member of the Dread Podcast Network.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to a brand new episode of Development Hell. This week, we are tackling the topic of Constantine 2. You guys have been talking about this episode ever since I started this podcast, so it really proves that there's a really strong demand for this movie. Today, we are joined by a really exciting guest. We have writer, director, producer Frank Capello is responsible for co-writing the 2005 Constantine film that has become like a cult phenomenon. Today, with Frank, we're going to talk about the comic books, we're going to talk about the first film, and then we're going to talk about what's going on with this possible sequel. Is there a chance that we're going to get it? Hey, Frank, can you introduce yourself to the Development Hell audience?
Hello there. My name is Frank Capello, and I'm really honored to be in Development Hell. I've been there a lot in my life, and so I feel right at home here.
How do you like describe yourself? Are you a filmmaker, a writer, a producer? What's on your card?
It's really filmmaker. I look at it that way because I write, I do direct, I make my own movies, and I've learned every aspect of making a movie over the years. Every single job, when you're doing these little movies on your own, you learn everything. You learn how to wire a microphone so it doesn't, you know, rustle against the suits and all this. You put it in your hair. Today I had to put one under my hat, so, you know, that's fun. Mm-hmm. But yeah, filmmaker all the way. I've only done it twice. I put a film by Frank Capello. I think that was No Way Back. And the ones I'm doing now. And I feel even kind of weird doing that because, you know, you have a giant crew and everything and you're taking full responsibility. Well, the two that I've been doing lately, it's my movies, you know, so I do that.
So what are the genres of film that you're working with lately?
I actually pulled something out. A lot of times writers, we have a lot of things. I have a rule that if I get past page 47, I'll finish it. But if there's a lot of screenplays that are before 47 and they're sitting on shelves. Well, one that I did finish years ago was called Chain Reaction at the time. But if you remember, there was a movie came out. And guess who's in it? Keanu Reeves. So yeah. It's just so strange. So I changed it to Fusion. So I pulled it out and I looked at it recently. And it's a diehard kind of movie. You know, it's my diehard back then. And I looked at it and I said, I have never seen these action sequences ever in a movie since I wrote it. So I decided to brush that off and keep it going. But I've also got little ones. I want to do something because I personally have gone through this. And but that's a tiny little festival film, and I'll do those, and then I'll do bigger ones. But I'm waiting on call for the thing that you and I talked about.
We're going to talk about today. Did you always know you would land in the realm of genre filmmaking, horror, sci-fi, you know, action, or is it something that kind of happened organically?
I've always been fascinated, and I have to say that the movie that got me into making movies was Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And Star Wars was out, I think, just before that, but I never clicked with Star Wars. For some reason, I clicked with Close Encounters. There was this whole thing of me trying to leave Florida to come to Hollywood. And it was almost the same thing as Richard Dreyfuss being drawn to some big mountain, you know, and then being taken away at the end. And that's the way I felt. So yeah, I've always been drawn to it. I love Aliens. I love Alien. I love all those kind of movies. You know, they're some of my favorites.
When did you first see Close Encounters? Do you remember how old you were?
Oh God, I saw it with my dad.
Yeah, me too.
It was 19. Was that 78, 79, somewhere in there, right?
Uh-huh.
So I don't know, 15, 16 years old. I'm an old man now. So,
do you remember it being scary, or were you just sort of in awe?
No, I got out of that movie, and I'm not a religious guy, but I told my dad I think I had a religious experience. There was just something about it. It got me into doing special effects. I built animation stands out of 2x4s and had a Super 8 camera. I did all that stuff.
Cool. Yeah. So if it's okay with you, I kind of want to talk about the comics first. So John Constantine Hellblazer. Would it be all right if I tried to give everyone just a little bit of a seminar of what this project is all about?
Sure.
Okay, so to my knowledge, John Constantine Hellblazer is a comic book originally published by DC in 1988, and then would go on to be published under their imprint Vertigo until 1993. It focuses on this streetwise sorcerer and a con man named John Constantine, and this is a series created by Alan Moore and Steven Bissett. And he first appeared in Swamp Thing, which is something that I just learned today for the first time. How would you describe this comic book series to someone that maybe doesn't know about it?
Well, you probably just said more than I know, honestly. I came onto the movie and two of the graphic novels that were the basis of the original film were Original Sins, which is like 8 or 9 different stories in it, and Dangerous Habits. And Dangerous Habits was, of course, done by Garth Ennis, and Original Sins was by Alan Moore. So I never met those guys. I never talked to them and everything. And I was given those, and then I started asking for more. And the screenplay I got at the time, we'll go through that later, was not what these graphic novels were. And they fascinated me, which is how I got in trouble with Warner Brothers, because I kind of went to their direction instead of what they were trying to write.
Mm-hmm. So what did they want then originally that you sort of veered away from? Like what did they have in mind?
I came into it after 3 writers had already started on this. 3 had tried to do it. The original was Kevin Broadbent, and I think he brought it in. He's from England. He knew the comics really well, and they listened to him, but they had no idea what this character was at Warner Brothers. And so they started hiring next guy and the next guy. I never got to read Kevin's original screenplay. In fact, I read a cut and paste of all of them, and I had no idea. It was like, it really was Indiana Jones going through Chinatown, doing once a one-liners with guns and cars. And I'm going, and then I don't want to even do this. It was so silly. Yeah. So I opened up the graphic novels and I started reading them, and I'm going, oh my God, this is not the screenplay. Mm-hmm. Now, I can't fault, like I've said before, anybody, because this was a cut and paste. Literally, you could see Whiteout, where the producers cut and pasted pages and they put them in the order they wanted and all. So I got this, and I didn't have to audition for it. Everybody was out to audition to be the next writer. Mm-hmm. And I basically sat down and I said, I don't want to audition because I don't know what to say when I go in that room, because this is a mess. So I read the graphic novels and loved the graphic novels, but they wanted me just to rewrite the screenplay. And I'm going, you can't rewrite this. You got to start over. So I took this huge risk. And I wrote a spec opening, like 10 pages. And I didn't go audition. I did it quick because I had to have the meeting in a week and a half. So I sat down and I just wrote a screenplay. I said, what is it going to be? And I said, Exorcist. Let's do an Exorcist. So the beginning of Constantine, where you see him with the mirror and all that kind of stuff and all, that's my spec script that got me the job. So I was able to do something with that thing trapped in the mirror and the little girl and all that stuff. And that got me the job. And wow. When I got, yeah. Anyway, I got the job doing that and I didn't have to audition. That was great.
Would you consider this your breakthrough gig in Hollywood?
It was for studio. Yeah, I'd already written and directed two films at this point. One was American Yakuza with Viggo Mortensen, and one was Russell Crowe with No Way Back. And this is when they were early in their careers, and I got them on the way up, you know. So mm-hmm. American Yakuza is still looked at as a really kind of cool film. I wasn't supposed to direct No Way Back. I was writing it as a script. And then suddenly the thing I was doing fell through and I go, okay, I'll go direct it. And then all the holes as a writer, you know, there's holes in your own screenplays and they'll have to work that out. But now I have to work it out, you know? So they were both great experiences and great guys to work with, honestly. And I mean, they both became movie stars. So it was awesome. Oh,
where would you say Constantine fits in the DC zeitgeist? Would you say it's like sort of in line with the other superhero content there, or is it an outlier?
It's an outlier. And I'll tell you how I know this. This is going to present time. This is a little inside information, is that when James Gunn took over DC Comics, he didn't want to do Constantine. It's not on his radar. It's not something he wants to do. Mm-hmm. And it's the bastard child of DC Comics. And the reason why I know this, because the man named Akiva Goldsman called me about this just a month and a half, 2 months ago.
And this is the producer of the first film. Yeah.
And he might be writing the next one. He's already supposed to write the next one, which is part of why I kind of put out a video there to make him feel a little guilty. And then he calls me finally, and he's going to bring me in. But I don't know when this is going to happen. So that's just something we can talk about later. But he said that the only reason why Constantine will ever get made is because Keanu will hold him their feet by the fire. He will say, I will not do any DC comic characters. You have to first do Constantine. So, you know, there's two of them coming out now. There's the Joker, two, and there's the Penguin. I think the Penguin is the next one, right? Mm-hmm. They have to release those before they even do a Constantine movie. That's what I've heard. Now, all of this could be a lie. All of this could be, you know, bad information. But, you know, I heard it from someone pretty high up.
Interesting.
That's where we're going to go on. And we can go on that more detail later. But I don't think they want to do the film. Back in 2010, when I wrote the other one, 2011, I found out now that J.J. Abrams was even involved back then.
I saw that.
And it just disappeared. And even Akiva told me that. He says, it just disappeared. It was gone. And see, Warner Brothers doesn't own that product. You know, they didn't, at least. It's DC Comics owns it, right? So that's why their TV series came out. And between you and me and a lamppost, even Keanu said, they don't want me. I mean, he's told me that. He said, Frank, we both tried on Constantine too, but they don't want me and they don't want you.
What was this? Was this like 2011 when he was talking like this?
Yeah, this was 2010 when I had a dream, 5 years after the first one. And I hadn't talked to anybody. I hadn't talked to Akiva, I hadn't talked to Francis, anybody. And I just had this dream of spontaneous human combustion. And I started writing like 12 pages and I didn't know what the hell I was writing. I sent it to my agent. She goes, you know what you just wrote? You just wrote Constantine 2, the opening. And I go, yeah, it's kind of who I was probably thinking of, because he tells a joke. I like movies that start with a joke. And Constantine's telling a joke about a guy that finds a suit and everything. And he's blindfolded. He's in an elevator being taken down further and further and further and further deep.
Yeah.
And we never hear the end of it until the end of the movie. You know, so it was like the joke starts. A dark joke, a very dark joke. But yeah, it was 2010. We can get into Constantine 2 because we can go back and start with the original one and we'll get into that more. Sure. What do you think?
I like that. So okay. I find it interesting that you said, you know, in 2010, Keanu Reeves maybe didn't have the sort of pull that he has now In 2005, he starred in the first Constantine, and I believe it had a humongous budget. You guys had something like $100 million to work with.
And I can tell you why. Can I tell you one reason
why? I'd love to know why, yeah.
It was $75 million. What happened was, it was Nick Cage was the actor, Tar Sem, the guy that did The Cell, and he was directing. And they were building sets and everything. Everything was going full bore. I was writing with Tar Sem at the time.
Whoa.
And what happened was, and I don't want to, I love Tar Sem, by the way, and I love The Cell.
Me too.
I think he's been his own worst enemy sometimes because he has so much talent. Why aren't there any more Tar Sem films out? I don't see many.
Yeah.
And he demanded to have the same amount of prep as David Fincher. And he kept saying, I want 6 months of prep. And David Fincher gets 6 months of prep. So they were telling him, and I know this through Lorenzo, he was the president of Warner Brothers, said if Tar Sem had just did whatever he wanted, lied to us, and just went off and made his version, and if it had come out good, he would have had it. It would have been made. But he kept arguing that I want this and I want that. And, you know, it was Lorenzo said he kind of sunk himself.
Yeah.
You know, and so Nicolas Cage was on only because of Tar Sem. And so when Tar Sem quit, and Nicolas Cage quit, and then there was no
one. Do you think that in the case of that original director, that like sometimes genius can get in the way? Like sometimes it can conflict with ego?
Yeah, but Tar Sem, you know, his nationality was whatever, his religion, Muslim. He comes from a Muslim country, yeah. And he was hilarious as all hell because this was after 9/11. Uh-huh. And, 2001, and he came on and he was saying, you know, the 31 virgins were on my plane. I was worried it would crash and we'd all go to hell or whatever. But he would make jokes about that. And he was a really funny guy. I mean, he had a lot of charisma. And he was a really funny guy, but he did have images that nobody at the studio wanted, like Jesus Christ on a surfboard with his eyes gouged out. Jesus Christ on a surfboard with his eyes gouged out,
see that
riding on the wave into Los Angeles with the four horses of apocalypse. And I even tried to do a little image of that when I did this video, just to say that they're going, we can't put that in the movie. It doesn't mean anything. But Tar Sem likes to do really strange. Look at The Cell. People remember that horse when it got sliced and they remember how it came apart. You can see all the organs. So he's that kind of director. He wants impactful images that you never forget. Mm-hmm. You know, the story, though, of The Cell was good, I still thought, you know.
Oh, I think it's an all-timer.
The funny thing about that back then, I got to go, so with three different directors, there was, what's his name? The first one, Paul Hunter. Oh. And he came on, he had done, he was just about to do a movie of his own, I fucking forgot what it was right now. I'm not supposed to cuss on this. Okay. Anyway, there are three different directors. And all three of them have one thing in common.
Mm-hmm.
They all worked for Jennifer Lopez. They all did Jennifer Lopez videos.
Interesting.
They did either music videos or they did The Cell. So she must have been really popular in that time frame because everybody worked for her. And I used to say, man, if I had only worked with Jennifer Lopez.
Yeah, who knows where you'd be.
Who knows where I'd be right now. But anyway.
Interesting. Well, it earned about $230 million, which, you know, for the average civilian, you hear it earned $230 on $75. That sounds good. Was that good? Was that considered successful?
No. If it had flipped, they always said that if 75, that's how much it actually made domestically, too, was 75. And then the rest was made foreign. If back then, if you remember, foreign films weren't as important. Now they are. Now they account for 2/3. But if it had flipped and they had made the same amount for the foreign, for the domestic, they would have done the sequel. And I was signed to do the sequel and I was coming up with all these ideas. I had a signed sealed deal.
Wow.
And then it didn't do it. It didn't make the money and they sunk it.
Was it considered a critical success at the time? I mean, since it's become a huge cult phenomenon with critics and fans. But when it came out, what was the response?
Well, my hometown of St. Pete, Tampa, Florida, called Homeboy Does Bad. That was the headline.
No.
So it didn't have good critical, good critics response. It really didn't. And because they didn't know who the character was.
Okay.
And they thought it was very subdued. And I have to say, Francis did a great job. He kept it subdued, and he kept it where we didn't explain anything. You'll notice that Constantine John never answers a question directly. And mm-hmm. that was intentional, because I had been reading a lot of stuff about natural men, how they go out at night, and they never, the guys that you really want to hang out with are the guys that are leaders. And they'll say, hey, where are we going tonight? And he goes, you know what? I really got to get a new car. They don't even answer you. And that's how Constantine, that's how I wrote him anyway.
That's cool.
There's a scene in there where she's at the bathtub and he's about ready to submerge her. Mm-hmm. And she goes, do I need to take off my clothes or can I leave them on? And you see John just sitting there the longest time. John. And he finally goes, they're going to leave them on.
Yeah.
And it's, the idea is that he doesn't answer right away. And that's a strong person. That's a strong man. And mm-hmm. I wanted to write him that way. In the comics, he's more of a smartass. He's more of a con artist. And I think the reason why I was handed a script that sounded like a bunch of one-liners from Schwarzenegger, because they thought that's being a smartass. But that's not cool. It's, you know, I'll be back, you know, and all those kind of lines were mm-hmm. in the script.
No, there's no nuance to that.
So he definitely a character that America didn't know. And right. definitely they thought it was going to be an action film like Blade, where Wesley Snipes is going around just killing. Now, they love the very last scene where he takes out the holy shotgun, which is an invention. It's not in the comics. Mm-hmm. That came from Nick Cage. Nick Cage wanted a gun and he wanted a car. And Constantine doesn't have either one of them. So we came up with a holy shotgun, you know, actually had a prop of that. They give us all one of those, you know. Mm-hmm. Plastic one and everything, but it's a beautiful gun, man. The real prop was amazing, you know. So it just didn't excite the audience, and they had to start figuring out, wait a minute, it's actually a little bit more of a serious film that it. And I remember when Keanu, and I was talking to him in Australia, he says, if I had to pick a director, I'd pick Coppola. He says, because I want someone that pays more attention to the character. And the special effects will come. And now watch the last Batman movie. The special effects, most of them were real. They used a real car. And that real car was Batmobile. And it was just, it was organic. It was gritty. It was like Mean Streets, like Taxi Driver back in the day. And I think that's what Keanu wanted. He wanted that gritty feel.
How soon did you know Keanu was going to be your lead? Had you already written everything?
Yeah, I'd gone through two other directors. And through Tarsim, and now Tarsim was gone. And like I said, they had no director, they had no writer. Though they had a writer, but they had no actor and no director. So I heard that Keanu loved the script. And at that point, it was Akiva that came to me and said, I always say that Akiva came to me. Doesn't that sound powerful? I probably came to him. I really did. But every time I tell you, so Akiva and I talked, and he said, listen, Tarsim's gone. You can put back the last draft before Tarsim's. And that was a draft everybody loved. But if you're a writer, you will always make the latest draft work. And so it's hard to go backwards. Sometimes it really is hard to take out the things that you made work. Now, mm-hmm. if you're a total hack and somebody goes, put a dog in there and a kangaroo, and you go, oh, God, I don't believe it. And you do it, you're going to want to take that out, you know. But no, so... It was, that was, gosh, what was it, 2001 or two, maybe even three. It's hard. It's been so long ago. But so I got to go over to Australia where he was shooting Matrix 3. You can figure out when they made Matrix 3 is when this happened. And I got to meet Keanu like 4 days in a row at night. After he'd done shooting, he'd come over and he'd have beer. He'd have six pack for all of us. And he was so excited to be working, but he had to keep his weight down to fit in this little skinny suit. So he kept talking about the steaks. I wish I could have the Australian steaks. I can't even eat, you know, all this. And there was a, I'll go into this a little bit, because at that point, there was no director. There was no actor. So I go down there and told him, you're not allowed to be alone with Keanu.
Why?
Because I had directed Viggo Mortensen. I had directed Russell Crowe. Now, these were two up-and-comers, and by then, they were really starting to pick up. And American Yakuza is still thought of as a really cool, one of the better B-movie action movies, you know. So they knew...
Go for the directing role?
So they didn't want me to direct it. Erwin Stoff had probably ideas. I wasn't his client, so he was probably thinking of somebody else. So I went there, and you know, it was really weird because I met Keanu, and I don't know what to say to him. Now I'm like, I can't talk to him alone, but I did one night, and I think Keanu's okay with it. So I say he went outside. He gets some air. Well, you can kind of guess, you know, what you're doing, but trying to keep his weight down.
Got it.
So I go out there and we talked about little movies and big movies because I had one called He Was a Quiet Man that I was going to get him the script after this. And he goes, man, I'd love to look at it. I love these little movies and I like to do the big ones. And I said, who do you think should be a director on Constantine? He says, oh, man, Coppola. Coppola would be so awesome. I don't want a music video director. I don't
because he'd worked with him 10 years before that.
Did he?
Yeah, on Dracula.
Oh, that's right. That's probably why he said that. He wanted, you know, he liked Dracula. He wasn't good in, it's my opinion.
I agree.
I don't know if Keanu was the best role for him.
Listen, I love that film, but he's a little wooden in it.
I like the one that he did with Al Pacino. What was that one where he was the devil?
Oh, The Devil's Advocate.
Yeah, I thought he was great in that.
Yeah, that one
he worked out really good. Certain roles are good for certain people. But anyway, that's when he told me he wanted Coppola and all that. And I was sitting there biting my tongue because I'm not allowed to say, you know, I'm a director and I would really love to get this film. And I got my shot. I got to be in front of everybody. And that's through Richard Donner, because Richard Donner was a friend then, because I was also writing Timeline at the time. Mm-hmm. Because I was writing Constantine, and it was in the same house. Her husband, Lauren Donner, is Dick Donner. So she does all the X-Men movie. He does all the Superman and Lethal Weapon movies. So they're in the same house, and I'm there on a meeting on Constantine. And over here, all the English guys are talking about Timeline. They're going to shoot it in England. It was a time travel Michael Crichton book. And I'm going, God, I wish I was over there, because all the guys, you know, Dick Donner's over there. And I think he's a so cool guy. And so I got on Timeline, was the last writer in. So I'm writing on both, writing on Constantine, I'm writing on Timeline. And Dick was telling me when I got back from Australia, he said, you really need to try to direct this movie. He had seen everything I directed. He had watched American Yakuza. He'd watched all my reels, everything. And he goes, Frank, you need to get back by behind the camera. You got to get back there. And this is the one. And all I said to him was, your wife is the producer. Tell her. She's never going to let you do it. You've got to go in there and win it. He was the one that pushed me to write a letter to Keanu. He's the one that pushed me to really, it's in a way, it screwed up everything.
And well, how far do you think you got? How close did you get?
I got the meeting with everybody. There were 9 people around the room. Erwin Stoff was sitting next to me. That's Keanu's manager. I had Lauren Donner at the end. I had Akiva here. I had all the brass at Warner Brothers. And I got that one day. And I came in and I said, listen, and I pitched myself as a director. I told them my crews loved me. I told them that I was great with the actors and all this. It would be my third film, right? It really would. And I did some of Suburban Commando, but that was like pickup shots for them. And I took that letter out, a letter that I'd wrote to Keanu that Dick Donner said, send him a letter. Write him. Tell him. Don't tell anyone. I go, what? He says, don't tell anyone. Okay. I wrote the letter, but I felt really bad if I went behind everybody's back, you know? So I got in that room, and at the end of pitching myself, I slid that letter out and I just said, I wrote this letter to Keanu to tell him I should be the director. And I could see Erwin Stahl sitting right next to me, and he's like so mad at me. And then I said, but I didn't send it because I didn't want you guys to think I'd go behind your back. I didn't. And I'm looking right at Lauren. Because I thought Lauren would know about this letter because that's her husband that told me to do it. But he was truthful. He never told anyone either. So everybody leaves and Akiva says, you did a really great job, but that letter. And I says, I never sent it. He says, yeah, but he thinks so and he doesn't want you. He's got this new guy, Francis Lawrence.
And so if you, that's who he had made up his mind probably to begin with.
He made it up before and didn't get the shot. I thought I had the shot, but the politics of Hollywood are, you know, you never know what
you're. They just gave you the meeting. What, to be polite?
Yeah, I think so. And also, I think that at this point, Keanu actually liked me. Mm-hmm. We got along really good. And the fact that I never mentioned that I wanted to direct it to Keanu, and I should, what if I had sent that letter? And I have this ghost of Dick Donner, because he died, I think, last year, and I have this image in my head. He was a rough son of a bitch, but he was funny as hell. And he, you didn't send it? You deserve to fail. You deserve to fail, you bitch, bastard, weakling, wussy. He would have done that to me. He would have said, how could you not send it?
Listen, but if you had sent it and they thought that you were a turncoat, you could have been fired.
Yeah, well, it was the end anyway, because once Francis got on, Kiva took over writing. And that was the lie that I was told. That's the lie that I even did in a video, because Keanu will remember this moment. But it was at the very end. He came to me and said, Francis Lawrence is going to do it. I got to let you go because he thinks you're a director. You're going to stare at him. You're going to wonder how I would do it instead of him, you know, look over his shoulder. And I told him I wouldn't do that. I really wouldn't. But he said, so I got to let you go. And Keanu wants me too. I said, Keanu wants you as the writer on this? He goes, yeah, because I'm also a producer. Okay. So then I go there on the second day of filming.
Yeah.
And they're all in the back and I see him take a break and Keanu comes all the way up in the darkness in the studio. Comes right up to my face and says, Frank, why are you on this movie? It was a total lie. It was politics. It really was. And so you talk about development hell, you know, as a writer going through all this is 4 years of my life. Now, I was working on a lot of other things.
Yeah.
But I was on that film from 1998, I think, to 2002 or three. And when Francis got on, I was gone. That's when I left. And a lot of people don't know that when you talk about comics, you know, how do I respect the original material? I didn't read enough of it to respect it. I got the tone. I got the feeling of the character. Mm-hmm. I got the world that he lived in. But I wanted to write my own story. And I didn't want to take one out of the comic book verbatim. I just didn't want to do that. That's a series. To me, that's a TV series. Yeah. You take these each segment. But when you're doing a movie, do the movie. And so the whole idea with the twin sisters, you know, that was mine. I threw out everything. So Kevin's name should be on this movie because he brought it to Warner Brothers. He's the one that got them to look at it. But the story is my story. It's nobody else's story. It's not out of the comic. I took some of the tidbits, you know, like even him going to hell, that was mine because I had the water.
But then how did your name end up ultimately being on the script as the writer, if all of that happened?
Well, because I was the last writer. You know, I was the last writer in. And so I threw out everything before me. And I started over. And when I turned it in, they would have fired me. They were so mad at me because I just wasted three writers' work. But then it was Lorenzo, the president of Warner Brothers, who basically picked it up one day because I didn't put anybody else's name on the screenplay. You know, you got to cheat sometimes, right?
Absolutely.
I put it down, he sees it, takes it home, and he says, now this is the writer, this could be a movie, and that's how I got on. And then it was all mine from then on.
How did the fans of the comic feel? You know, you did something unique. You did something a little bit away from the wheel. What did they say? Like, how did they feel about you?
During the time I was writing, I signed on and became a member of the Hellblazer kind of like blog over there in England. Mm-hmm. And it was all about the comics. They didn't talk about the movie or anything. And I didn't tell them who I was. So I would go in there and I'd say this and that. And I'd hear them bitching and moaning, going, they're going to make an American version of this. Where's Ewan McGregor? Where's this? Where's that? And then when they heard Keanu Reeves was on, they were freaking out. They go, why don't they just make their own supernatural guy? Why did they have to use our guy, right?
Fair enough. Finally,
they figured out who I was one day, and they just went after me something fierce. And I said, listen, guys, I'm just the writer. You know, I went down, we got Keanu, and he's a $20 million star, and that's why the movie's going to get made.
Yeah,
it shouldn't get made. We don't want it to get made, you know?
Oh, fans.
So, it was tough. But I'll tell you this, at least I stuck more to it than the studio wanted to stick to it. They would have put guns in it. They would have put hot cars in it. And thank God, you know, I guess it was the vibe of the actual graphic novels that said, you can't do that. You know, you got a guy that doesn't use a car. You know what? We don't ever know why he doesn't use a car unless there's one of the early comics. You know, he's 40 something years old in the comic book and he doesn't drive. He always has Chaz driving him. That was the only casting decision I thought was a little off, was that, you know, he was too young for that role. In his comics, he's a 40-year-old guy. They get out of the car sometime and beat the hell out of each other, you know. So It's
I'm trying to remember the name.
I respected the comic. Yeah, I respected the comic up to the point of that it fit with what I wanted to do. Like I saw Pentagram and Candles and All to Go to Hell, and I go, come on, we've seen that in 1,000 movies. Can we do something different? So I came up with the idea that the water is a conduit. He puts his feet in a bucket. He's holding a cat. But it allows us to do a lot of things with water. And I guarantee you, even if I don't end up on the next film, they're going to have to use that.
Oh, for
sure. They're
going
to use that membrane, and they're going to use how he got his little bit of a power. Because that came from my dad's heart attack. It's not in the comic.
Okay, and let's hear about that for a second, if that's okay.
What's that?
Can we talk a little bit more about that and how that came from your father?
Yeah, it was, I think Tar Sim was still on the picture. They were about ready to probably fire him and get next one, Keanu and all. And my dad had a real scare, and we thought he was going to die. And he was in Florida, and I got called out, so I went out and found out that 5 of his arteries were blocked on the heart. And so they pulled the veins out of his leg, and they're putting the stitches in and everything. And then afterwards, we're sitting in the room, and they come out, and they're telling us we couldn't get the heart started. It was gone for 4 or 5 minutes, but finally it starts beating on its own. And that wasn't the weird part. Like 3 months later, 2 months, he kind of healed pretty quick. He was doing his walking. He was doing everything. And he came out. My mom warned us. She just said, your dad has changed. He doesn't whistle. My dad always whistled. He was always a happy guy telling jokes. It all ended after that heart surgery. So one day I talked to him. I said, Dad, you know, what is it? And he goes, I'm having these horrendous nightmares, and they're filled with images that I can't even. And he was using his fingers and the intestines. And it was kind of like he was saying grotesque things, exotic sexual things that were just not of this world. That's kind of what he was saying. And I go, let me get you a therapist while you're here in Los Angeles. And he goes, I'm not going to do that crap. And my mom told me later that he had a terrible fear of death because he knew exactly where he was going, because he fought in the Korean War and he was Catholic. So Catholics are not supposed to take a life, but my mom thinks he did. He probably had to kill some people in the war. So this butted up against each other. And after having these nightmares, he kept thinking, I believe he was seeing where he was going. Wow. Now, if you believe all this, I go back and I tell Akiva, I said, I know what his little magic thing is. And that's why he committed suicide as a boy. And then he comes back and he can see them. That came right out of my dad. So it's like they're going to have to use that too. So it's like, okay, the original artists, the original writers, they got him to a certain point. And then I pushed him a little further. So should I be the guy that's not involved in the second one? That's the way I look at it. I got it this far. And even Keanu said that in a Comic-Con interview, 15th anniversary. It was Francis and Akiva sitting there. This video is gone, by the way. They redid it. And tell me why for a second here. There's a monitor behind them on the wall. The guy from Comic-Con's interviewing them, and they're talking for 10 minutes. And I'm ready to shut it off because they're patting each other on the back, how they made this great movie. They don't mention the writer.
Mm-hmm. Never do.
Keanu comes up on the monitor, and he starts talking. He's got his long hair, you know, he's being Bill and Ted, you know, and he goes, hey, let's not forget Frank, for without him, none of us would be here. And you know what they did? They looked down like they didn't want to hear this. And what I feel is what happened was Francis Lawrence and I never talked. I never had a conversation with him. He never would meet with me. He never called me on the phone saying, hey, I'm making your film. You've been on this for a long time. I love the screenplay. I'm going to make you proud. Come out to the set anytime. Nothing. I didn't cause that. Someone else caused that. Now, I was gone right after Francis got hired, and Akiva went on as the writer. I won't say any more than, what did he tell Francis?
Okay. You can't know, but...
So, okay, production hell on my end. I had a lot of production hell, let me tell you. And I learned a lot about politics. About it. Anyway.
Before we head into the sort of landscape of Constantine II, I'm really curious about, you know, the changing of the tide and how people perceive that first film. You're saying originally you were in the papers, you know, as a flop. But then, I mean, my perception over the last little while is fans adore it. People love it. People can't stop talking about it. It's a cult phenomenon. Did you see that shift happen slowly? Did it happen quickly?
It happened. Yeah. And, you know, I was all over the world. I actually wrote, you're going to laugh, Alan Moore's Swamp Thing in Paris. I was in a cafe writing in Paris, because the great thing about writers, when you write for the studio, they pay you well. And so you can write anywhere. I wrote the second film in Czech Republic on Constantine II. Of course, there was a girl there, so that helped. But, you know, so it's it did change. And I know this because when I was in Budapest, Hungary, I went in and I never used it. And I walked in and there's this long counter and I'm trying to get a room and all this. And they give me a room and I go in there and I'm looking at a wall that's 2 feet from my window. And my wife-to-be was with me and she's just, go down there and tell them you're a writer, that you need to write in this room and you need a view. So I go down and I says, you know, I'm a writer. I'm going to stay here. I'm going to come back, maybe work 3 weeks. Can I get a view? And they go, what did you write? And I go, Constantine. The girl runs from down at the end, runs up to me and she goes, Constantine? You wrote Constantine? And they gave me this amazing room. And we were only there 2 days, but it is. And I'll tell you who I think made it a hit is women, because they understood the balance more than a man. This is back before we had angels and demons and a lot of shows, TV shows. This is where the angels are among us and the demons are among us, right? And so they're the ones that really got the story more than the men did, which is why they didn't need a lot of action. And I think it was them that got their boyfriends, their husbands, or whoever, all the men they knew, to finally watch the film. And then Keanu has become such an iconic figure in the world. Mm-hmm. This is the most, I would say Keanu has probably the most untainted actor that we have right now. There is no scandals. He doesn't do any publicity. He's scared to death when he's on a show. You see his hands shaking and everything. He doesn't want to do interviews that way. And I think it was his rising up too that actually made Constantine rise. I really do. And I think, so he's the only one that can get Constantine to make. If you really want to know the secret, if Keanu says, I want to do it, it will get done. Now, back in 2011, he couldn't do it.
Yes. But now he's just going to say that. I think he's never, even in compared to the Matrix era, I don't think he's ever been as famous as he is now.
Yeah. And it's not because of his movies. Think about that. It's not. It's because
it's out of help.
Well, yeah, okay. It is. And I mean, he went from a pacifist guy, and he is a pacifist guy.
And that's why everyone loves it, because it's that.
Yeah, they just shoot that. I mean, when he goes at, you've seen the firing range thing where he goes out there with all the other, like Charlize Theron, and he's teaching them. And I mean, this guy, if he ever got in a battle, I think he'd win. I think he really knows how to use a gun. So the way I would write Constantine II is I would not write him to play Constantine, because he's in his 60s now, right? He is. He's 60, 61. Wow. Constantine was never that old. So 40, we have a 20-year gap. 20 years, where has he been? I would write Constantine to Keanu. He would not be playing John Constantine. John Constantine would be Keanu. And I'm saying that because I want to sit down when I get the chance. I had a long conversation on the second one we did in 2010, but I want to have another one, and I don't want to talk about the movie. I want to talk about him. Where is he in his life? I want to hear, what does he feel? What does he feel about life? What does he feel about the planet? What does he feel about what's going on? Because the Constantine I want to write involves who he is now. He is a guy that hates heaven. He hates hell. He hates God. He hates the devil. And they're pulling us apart.
So let's jump into it. What does your vision of Constantine II look like? What can you tell me?
Well, that is my vision. My vision of Constantine II is, I don't think I want to say this because there'll either be people going, oh, come on, that's corny as hell, but not the way I'd write it. Because if they knew what I wrote in Constantine II, it is a lot harder to get to hell. I mean, heaven. It's a lot harder to get to heaven than hell, because it's a VIP, 5-star place. You can't get in. The devil's going, come on down, join us for a party. But you can't get up. And it's more dangerous going up. That's what I made in the second one. There's 3 levels of going higher. And when you go higher, it gets worse and worse. And the whole world is being wiped off the face of the earth every 10 seconds by the winds. And it's so visual. It would have been so cool. And Keanu loved that version, by the way. But he and I both said they're never going to make it. They're just not going to make it. So that went on the back burner. And now we're back to a new one. But the way I look at it now is I really do think that Keanu is the only person that could do the version I want to do. Because he's the only actor that the whole world loves. He's the only one that doesn't have kind of a predisposition of which side he's on. He's violent, but he's also a pacifist almost. He walks the earth as a clean soul, kind of, like he does. And with the long hair, I mean, who does he start to look like when he's walking around in the cities, when he's rocking? So when I started to write something, the new 15 pages, it was called Second Coming. Now, he's not Jesus, okay? And that's not what he is.
Well, there's a certain metaphor there, though.
Yeah, J.C.
J.C., yeah.
And so I put it in the second one, too. But in this one, what happens at the beginning, what I wrote, is I'll just go ahead and say it because they'll probably never do it. Because they wouldn't read it. Right now, they won't read it. They're worried about what they are going to make. I Am Legend 2 is next. And so whether I get on board this thing or not, it really does depend on two people. Michael DeLuca at Warner Brothers. And it's not Keanu. Keanu wants me on it. Even Kiva said, he always talks about, you'll be on it. But it's Keanu. If he really puts his foot down and says, I'm making this next, I won't listen to anything else. And that's supposedly where he's at. I don't know if he's doing a movie, though, right now, isn't he?
I don't know.
But it's up to Keanu and it's up to Michael DeLuca, really, if this movie goes forward, because Warner Brothers has to pay for it. DC Comics is the company, but Warner's is going to have to make it. And I know Michael DeLuca from the New Line Cinema days, and he's gone through, I mean, shoot, when he was at Sony, he did a huge amount of movies, great movies, Social Network, all of those. So he's got a lot of cachet now, and what he says goes. Kiva doesn't even have that kind of power.
But it was officially announced via Deadline in 2022. They made a whole song and dance that it was with Keanu, and it was happening, and it was real. So what was that?
It's the same thing every year. It's hype. My son calls me every year and he says, hey, they're making Constantine 2. And I laugh. And this is 8 years. And I laugh and I say, it's just hype. And they usually say, are you on it? I don't know if I'm on it. I never have to answer that question because the rest is hype. So I never have to even talk about it until this last one. The 2022, I heard, it sounded serious. You know, it's like, and then this is why I made a certain video. I wrote a YouTube video called How I Wrote Constantine. Because of this, I heard they've got everybody back that made the first film. You know, they got the producer, they got the director, they got the actor, and they got the writer. And it wasn't my name. And that's when my son says, you have to make a video. You have to tell them. I wrote a journal back then, so I know every freaking detail. And to tell them who really wrote that story. And I go into extreme detail in this video to show them, like my dad, you know, having the heart attack, like me playing soccer and being all scratched up is where I came up with the mirror thing and all that. I know every way I write. And I'm not saying that people, once I started rewriting in the studio system, you have to listen to them. You always have to take everything they tell you and write it down. Akiva did taught me, let everyone speak in the room. Write everything down when you get home. Throw it all out. And try to figure out what it really is they're saying, because then it's still yours. It remains yours. They're not dictating to you to do this, do that, do that. And nobody ever did. So I was always able to write what I wanted to write. And I kept reinventing it. And I used to call it constant pain, because every holiday I'd have to write for 2 weeks and deliver it before Sundance, and everybody wanted to see. And so every Christmas, I was going back into this religious world of Constantine, you know. So pretty strange life. But I actually really love the character. And I really think that I know him as good as the guys that invented him now, because I wrote Swamp Thing too. And I tried to put Constantine in it and they wouldn't let me. And I
it's where he comes from. It's his literal roots.
Yeah, nobody knows I wrote that either. I actually told Akiva that recently, and he says, you wrote a Swamp Thing? I says, and it's really cool, and I'm going to steal a lot of out of it for some other script right now. So I made it a metaphysical horror movie, which is what Alan Moore's script was. It's not a talking man plant, but I was working for Joel Silver. And you know, Joel did Die Hard movies and all these big Lethal Weapons. And Joel, I only met him for like 3 minutes, and he goes, I want that big plant man. Where's the monster? And I wasn't writing that story. I was writing something else, and I only got to do one draft. You know, that's me.
I have to know, though, because we're dancing around it, this opening that you were talking about for Constantine 2.
Yeah.
Can you give us more details on that?
Well, it's just me sitting down after getting a call that wasn't a good call. So I'm going to be waiting a long time to find out if I will be on Constantine 2. And since they wouldn't read it, they just deleted it. They said, well, if a producer reads something, the producer union says, then I have to own that. I would have let them have it because there's nothing else I can do with it. It has to have Keanu. And it has to be that character. And basically, all I did was I just started writing it. And it doesn't mean it would be the beginning of the movie. Just like the one that I did on 2 was spontaneous human combustion being taken down there, and Jesus Christ is in a jail cell. The demons have captured, and he looks like Frank Frazetta. He looks like the Frank Frazetta drawing of Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, big guy, because he's going to lead a thousand, a million man. What the hell was that? My light went out. It's a ghost in here.
Spooky.
Anyway, so that was Constantine 2 back then. And
Got it.
It was basically the second coming back then was with the rapture. And the rapture, I had to learn all this because I had to learn all this, you know, religious stuff and everything. And it was all the God's chosen people would leave the earth, and then there'd be a thousand years of hell on earth, devils and all this. But John was saved in the first film. If you remember, the devil pulled that out and he gave him the finger and God saved him. He sacrificed.
Yeah, of course.
But John's with a different woman. He's with a Muslim woman. He's got a little kid in Constantine 2. And he goes, well, what about them? And he said, well, they chose wrong. This is Jesus Christ telling him. I mean, I wrote some really, really risque dialogue for Jesus Christ. That's why I got the job. That's why he said, go make that film.
Listen, he's not on a surfboard and his eyes aren't plucked out. So it could be worse.
No, wasn't that. But Gabriel would be in it. The one that had her wings burned off.
And she
would be telling the story like Amadeus. She'd be talking about the whole story about, and he thinks he's talking about Jesus Christ, but it's John Constantine, the JC.
Do you think she would come back?
Oh, yeah. I think she would. A minute. People love amazing. Working with Keanu. They just love him.
Yeah, they do.
You know, so the new one, the one I just sat down and wrote, three weeks ago, and I said to my agent, well, I got the first film by writing a spec. I got the second one by writing a spec. I'm gonna write another spec. I don't know if it fits, but I started it on a subway, and it's today. And I had three punk guys go in there, and they start trying to steal everything from everybody on the subway. And I always think in visuals. The camera's going back, and there's a homeless guy at the very back reading a tiny little book. His hair is long. It's black. It's dirty. He's got this satchel next to him, and they're pissing everybody off. They got a gun on kid's head. And there's a woman that starts to go into labor, this Hispanic woman. And she's going to have birth right then. And I had to even look at the train stations in New York. Is there one that's like 15 minutes? So that way it'd be a 15-minute ride right while I was writing this. Well, there's other people on that train. And we don't know who they are. But when we get to John Constantine and we see through his eyes, half that freaking tram is full of demons. And he's got a voiceover and he says, you know, it used to be 1 in 5,000. Now there's so many, I can't even handle it.
Whoa.
And he's got, and he sees all these freaking, and they're not harming anybody until that they kill those three guys so fast. The demons do. Who cares? Get rid of them. And then they turn on the little baby that's going to be born. Whoa. And it's almost like the thing they want more than ever. And that's when John Constantine raises his head. That's when everything out of that bag comes out. And he does one line, you know, I don't even want to say it because it's a corny line, but he does do one, you know.
What is it?
I don't want to say, but he's got the dragon's breath. He's got everything. And he just goes to town on these guys. So I start the movie the way we ended the last one, with action. I'm going to give everybody what they want. And then I'm going to make you feel guilty for loving it. Because when he kills all those people and he goes to the girl and he helps deliver that baby, and she looks at him, and she speaks Spanish. He speaks Spanish. He speaks every language. Just the way I look at Constantine, he could speak everything. She could be any language, you know, Filipino. She could be the Australian. They do speak English. What do I say? Anyway, she's taking the baby out. He helps deliver it. And she goes, and he has to leave because they're coming to a stop. And she goes, "Who are you?" And he puts his initials in the blood that's all over the baby because it's come out of the womb. Plus there's shit all over the walls. Yeah. And he puts, and you don't see it right away, right? And then he leaves out the back. And then the thing stops. And the doors open. And all the people that are going to get on see this thing is just everything. Blood and guts and arms and legs. I even have a piece of art that I do art all the time. And I did an art with a little girl just sitting like this holding her baby. And the umbilical is still attached, you know? So now the police come, all this and everything, and they're going, "What happened? Who was he? What happened?" And he goes, "Well, he was not there. He went out that door," and they all look at the door, and he goes into the tunnel, right? Mm-hmm. So they send all these cop cars. But meanwhile, they lean down to her, and they say, "Who was he?" and everything. She says, he was Jesus Christ. He blessed my child before he left. And they see the JC like, oh, give me a break. So he goes through a tunnel. They send New York police to every single exit could be there. And he comes up, he has flipped his coat around, everything comes up. There's no one out there. And he knows there's something wrong. There's not a single person on the sidewalk. And the whole SWAT team just surrounds this guy and takes him down as one of the worst mass murders ever. Now, why? Because the video on that train does not show demons.
Of course.
It shows humans. So, I mean, he's interrogated. Even one guy just says, "You're going to rot in hell and you're going to spend the rest of your years in hell." And so Constantine just starts laughing because, you know, I was always going there anyway, right? So, I mean, they beat the shit out of him at one point. They throw him in this jail cell and then they have the arraignment. And you see people at a 7-Eleven or a Hispanic store where they're all watching TV in Spanish. And what it is, they're interviewing the lady. She's going, "He was kind. He was sweet. You could feel his soul. He was this and that." And then they go, "Can we see the initials?" So she holds up her baby. She still hasn't wiped the blood stain off it. And she goes, "As long as it remains on my baby, he will never be harmed. He will always be protected." And that's the way it goes. So now it starts to spread, right? So when they're doing the arraignment and the news lady's going, "Whether this man is this or that, he's bilking people, he's making people think he's what he's not and everything. But today at the arraignment, they'll find out the truth." And then it's in a courtroom. You wouldn't imagine a Constantine movie in a courtroom. I mean,
but thematically, it makes sense almost. It's
totally so he's wearing the stuff they give him in prison. And they had his arms so tight on the cuffs and the legs. He comes out there wearing white. His hands are scarred. And all the people in the back row all stand up to watch him because they believe it's the second coming. Mm-hmm. He has no lawyer. And they go, "Okay." And the judge says, "Do you understand not guilty or guilty? If you say no contest, that means you're guilty until proven innocent." All this. He won't answer. He answers them twice and he will not answer. And then you have someone going, "Your Honor, Your Honor." And it's a woman. "May I approach the bench?" She runs up and says, "I'm his attorney." And Constantine even turns and all, "Who the hell is this?" It's Tilda Swinton.
Nice.
It's Gabriel. She's become a lawyer because she sends people up. She sends them down.
It's perfect. It's perfect.
It's so perfect. So she says, he's like sitting there like, "What the frick is this?" And they go, "We're going to take a 5-minute recess. Let her client her talk." He goes back there. "What the hell are you?" She goes, "What are you doing? I've tried to find you for 3 years. He goes, "I'm off the grid and all this." And she goes, "You autographed a baby," you know, all this kind of shit. You know? And he's going, you can't fool people. You're not a lawyer. You'll never pull this off. She goes, "I am a lawyer. It's been 20 years and I'm a really freaking good lawyer. You ought to be happy you got me and all this." So they're arguing back and forth and everything. And the dialogue is so fun between those two. And just before it's just now, "You're going to do everything I tell you to do. Everything. Or you have no chance in there. Okay?" And he goes, "By the way," he says, the years have not done. And you know, what is that line? They always say the years have been not kind to you. The years have not been kind to you. And she goes, well, that's something we both have in common. You know, because they're both older, right? And he goes out there and he stands there. They read the whole thing. You kill these people in the most worst way possible. Blah, blah, blah. How do you plead? He goes, guilty as charged. And that's how I ended it. And that's the only way he can get out quickly. If he said not guilty, there's a trial. If he said no contest, there's a trial. So I figured guilty, and we're going to use the people. She even says, listen, for whatever reason, some people see you as the worst crime. They should rot in hell for the rest of your eternity. And other people see you as the second coming. And he goes, they're both insane. And she goes, yeah, but we got to find a way to bring them together. What is happening today?
Well, I was just going to say, it's all about, you know, the polarizing politics.
Yes. And who better than John Constantine, who hates both sides?
It has to be.
Now, by the way, no one knows about this but you now. You're the only person that's heard this story because I wasn't allowed to send it to them. They threw it away. So I would hope that Keanu reads and listens to this because he doesn't know this. My agent says, don't call him. Don't go over their head yet. Let's see where it goes. But I just wanted him to hear. I think he would love to play this role because what comes next is kind of crazy. And the way we go through this is it's violent and it's an R-rated, and it has to be because that's what they want. They want a hard R. Do you ever hear how they got the R rating?
No.
Or they were trying to get a PG-13.
Yeah.
And so they figured if they kill demons, that's not a human. And they gave him an R. And they go, what? So we have an R anyway? We could have gone crazy.
You could have done anything.
You could have done anything. And so that's why now it's a hard R, anything they do.
As it should be.
So that was the scene that I wrote. And I said, it's only 15 pages, you know, and I wrote it like in 2 nights. I just said, I'll write something. And I did artwork for it. I use Midjourney a lot now in Photoshop and everything, and I can get the images I want. I've always done art, though. Even on the original Constantine, there's a little animatic that's on there put to Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. Where I did a shot all in animation of them standing outside with the rain coming down, and she's standing on one, Constantine standing on the other. And I did this whole little animatic of in prison and him with this little child and all. And they put it as an Easter egg on the original DVD, which was kind of cool.
I didn't know that.
On the second one, I did a whole map to heaven in my house because the second one is all ropes. And Gabriel lives in an abandoned church. And on the ceiling, she's put this ropes. And he's looking at it. She goes, that's my way back. That's how you get back to heaven. It's each level's higher. And there's little strings that go between them. And it can happen in L.A. It could happen anywhere. You can get to heaven anywhere. You just know they have to know the path. So I made this whole path. And by the way, I'm going to steal that. I'm doing a heist movie, and I'm going to steal that.
Good.
Find an angel in the desert, and they got to bring her back home.
Don't steal it too fast, though, because hopefully we get this movie. We need this movie. Fans want this.
Up to Keanu. It's totally up to him. How hard he's willing to fight for it. I got to tell you this. When I heard about the screenplay, they keep saying, well, we have the idea. We just haven't written it yet. So I would text Keanu, and they said, we want a hard write, hard R. He doesn't ever text me unless it's important to text back. So I just said, you know, I can write a hard R. I did that in 2011. Get me on this film. Never hear back. Then I hear from Akiva that I don't even have to talk to Keanu. I can bring you on. He's fine. I have to make sure Michael DeLuca at Warner Bros. I have to make sure this and all. I says, okay. He says, give me some time. Now, the second one took 6 months before they made the deal. So it's only been like 2 months. I don't know how long this is going to take.
This is another 10 years of your life ahead of you, probably.
You know, my agent says, let it go. Go make your other stuff. Write other stuff. Just go make more movies and all. And that's what I'm doing. The Womb, by the way, I guess I told you this the first time you and I talked, this little film. By the way, there's the poster behind me. And it's a psychological thriller. And we won the best picture of the whole festival. In L.A., where all these guys think they're Spielberg. It's not an important festival. And I got Dances with Wolves. I got another Dances with Films is coming
up. Yeah, it's a big one.
We have another one in that one. But so I think that's scaring Akiva because he heard that I was making films still. And then I win this award, even though it's not an Oscar. It's nothing important. And they're probably thinking, Frank's going to want to direct this one. I don't want to. I don't want to. But Francis is going to direct it. I just want to write it.
We want you to write it too. And yeah. You made that video. You made the YouTube video. That got attention. You're going to continue to get attention with this podcast. Hopefully this is a campaign that you can continue to...
I have to go around certain people.
Yeah, you have to do... It's like what that guy that swore at you in the first place, you know? You just have to do what you have to do.
You know, you get so close in this world. I've had three different times where, well, you're going to be the director, and then they get a bigger guy. And Lorenzo told me once, he says, you're like a lucky charm. Every time you write something, it gets an A-lister. Unfortunately for you, you're thrown out as the director. I mean, it was Lorenzo used to tell me, you need to start attaching yourself as either director, at least as a producer, because that's what Akiva does. He's producing every single one of these. So when you see an interview about the writer and the directors there and the actor, he's always on stage with them. And he's just the last guy in, you know, and it's like, where's the first guy? The one that came up with this idea, you know, and
totally screwed.
I don't dislike Akiva. I think he's a fascinating guy. But I wouldn't put it past him to tell me something that's just to make me happy and then pull it out from under me. Because
it's not unfamiliar in this industry.
Yeah. Anyway.
I want to head into conclusion territory because my big question for you is, what do you think the odds of Constantine happening or Constantine 2 happening with or without you? Do you think this movie will happen?
Yeah, it won't happen now. I think it would happen another year, but every year, Keanu's getting older, and
he's looking great.
Although we all love him, he will not cut his hair lately. And people are saying, why does he keep growing his hair? Why does he keep growing? He looks terrible. Well, right to that hair.
I like it.
You know what I mean?
I do.
If he sees this, listens to this podcast, if he listens to it, if he hears about it, Frank Capello has this idea called Second Coming. And the only person that could ever be in it is Keanu. And the only character he could ever play is Constantine. And the only time he could ever tell it is right now. You don't think he would jump? He would be calling me right now. He'd be texting and we would get this out of the way. And then it would happen. That's how it happened.
And if anyone at home has any connection to this guy, to Keanu, just send him a nudge. Because why not?
Right.
Now, you think fans should stay hopeful?
Yeah, and I think their voices are the most strong. I think the more they push, the more this will happen. I really do. I think when they, you know, Akiva's gotten a lot of bad crap because when he attached himself as a writer on Reddit, they attacked him. Yeah. You know, they're going, we don't want him. He did Batman and Robin. Okay, he did one film that everybody wanted to kill him on. But it really wasn't his fault. He was writing for Joel Schumacher, wanted to do all that. But at the same time, it's part of the machine. My agent has always told me, if you want to stay with a writing career, feed the machine. Keep giving them what they want. Change little things like that. So if a director says, I want this and this and this, and you don't agree with it, you got to do it or you're gone. So I think that's what happened on Batman and Robin. I don't think Akiva had...
I didn't hate Batman and Robin. I think it's nice and camp. I'm not a fan of The Dark Tower, but that's a different conversation.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. But he's a guy. He's got Paramount. Has he got the Star Trek series now? He's doing I Am Legend. And the reason why he called me on Constantine, too, because he basically says, I'm really, really busy. Now, that could have been a way for him to eat a little crow. Like, after 12 years of never calling me, after Constantine 2, I turned that in. Never have heard it from anyone. They paid me.
Oh, good. I was going to ask.
No, but they never, ever called to say, we hated it, we loved it, nothing. You don't do that to a writer. You're killing them. You're stabbing them.
Yeah.
You know, so I've gone through a hell of a lot of shit because of that. I lost my confidence in writing for a long time. And it really, really hurt. And I think Akiva was trying to make amends. And then when he saw that video, didn't hurt him. I don't need to do that. Well, okay. We'll see where you end up.
Well, you know what? I have faith in you. We're all big fans. And you know, you're the one for the job, so hopefully this is what happens. I'm wondering, you know, this movie aside, what are you up to next creatively?
Well, like I say, I'm writing right now. I've decided for the rest of this year just to write. So I got three screenplays I want to finish, get back writing screens. Because the last two films I made, I didn't really write a script. I used the film as the script, and I kept changing it as I went, and that's why it took me so long to finish the movie Behind You, The Womb. Mm-hmm. But that movie is deeper than I ever wanted it to be, and so I want to do something that's kind of fun. I want to do an audience-pleasing movie. I call it APM. I need to do an APM.
Because what genre?
You probably don't know... He Was a Quiet Man. I did with Christian Slater, William Macy.
I can see the poster.
It's another dark movie. It just ends dark. People want to shoot me at the end of that movie. And they understand it philosophically, intellectually, but emotionally they hated me.
Okay.
And I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to be hated.
So are you thinking comedy? Are you thinking silly horror?
No, I mean, just something that has an ending that you go, yeah. Yeah, you come out of that going, that's it. That movie, they come out going, what? And then we went to a party afterwards and they all go, you know what I think happened was this and this and this. And then I gave them one clue and they go, oh.
You're making them think. You don't always want to think.
That was a festival, so I'm still editing.
Well, my last question for you today is, where can people find you online if they want to see what you're up to?
Well, I don't really have a Frank Capello website, but I do have, I have FCAP. That's kind of my nickname, EFFCAP. There's an FCAP.com. You can see things that I've made, artwork, everything on that page. Cool. It doesn't get updated. But my IMBD, of course, under Frank Capello. I have a Facebook page.
I was going to ask.
Instagram.
Yeah, plug your socials.
My Facebook, what is that? It's, see, they're hooked together, so I never know. I wrote it down somewhere because I don't even know, because I just go on there, you know. So I think it's, oh, there is F Capello 1.
Okay.
F Capello 1 is on there. And then The Womb, also thewombmovie.com. There's stuff on interviewing me and all that.
Nice.
Too, so you can see a little
bit. And I'll link some of that in the show notes, and I'll also link where people can watch the YouTube video about how you wrote Constantine, if they're interested.
Yeah, I keep changing the thumbnail on that, so I'm going to see what... I cut the beginning off. I don't know if you ever saw it, but I cut this whole thing of, why did I write? Why did I do this? I cut all that off and just start right into it.
I think I saw it with that. Did you
do
that?
Yeah, I saw it with that. Cut it off. I cut the first 2 minutes off and started right into, how did I get this job?
Hey, you got to catch them right away.
Right.
So it's not a bad idea.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. Well, this was... you know, an honor. This was very, very exciting as a fan to get to talk to you about all this. So I really appreciate it.
All right, Joss. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for listening to Development Hell. If you enjoy this podcast, then please do us a major favor of leaving us 5 stars and writing a positive review. It really makes all the difference in the world. We'll see you next week with a brand new episode of Development Hell.
Thank you for listening to the Dread Podcast Network.